Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. James McCoy, VP of Academic Affairs for the College of Southern Nevada, or CSN. Fall classes at CSN are starting on Monday, August 26th, with a mix of online and in-person options. James, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Heather. It's great to be here.
So how long has the College of Southern Nevada been around?
You know, we opened our doors for the very first time as Clark County Community College back in 1971. So well over 50 years now. And back then, as we reflect and think about the demographics of Clark County, right, and the population size, so much smaller than the booming, rustling town that we all call home now. So as the community has grown, so has the College of Southern Nevada. And now over 50 years later, we serve well over 30,000 students in a given semester. And we've got well over, probably about 1,400 full-time and part-time teachers at CSN.
Wow, that's amazing. So what is CSN's mission?
You know, we really pride ourselves, Heather, on being the community's college. And so we have a mission that is centered on access. And what I mean by that is it's important to us at CSN that every human being, regardless of where they come from, what their background is, whether they come from a long lineup of family who has attended college in the past, or they're their first in their family to even dream of going to college, that we have a home for them. We have a place for them. We've saved a seat for them. And so as our access mission is, of course, sort of spotlighted, we take it upon ourselves to make sure that every human who has a desire to grow in their education or to prepare themselves for their career or their next move in their workforce, that we have a home for them. And this focuses in this example, when you think about who CSN serves from an access mission, we're providing higher education to young people that are still in high school through our early college program for dual and concurrent enrollment. So students who are 16, 17 years old, who are still in high school, who want to get a jump start on their college career, they have a home. And we serve about 4,000, almost 5,000 students in that space every semester. And then we've got students on the other side of the spectrum. Well, you know, and adults who've been out in their career in the workforce for decades and decades, who look to CSN to retool, re-engage, relearn, get into a pathway that is a change for them, and they want to start something new and fresh. We have a home for them as well. And then you think again about this access mission, Heather. One of the things that we're really excited about right now, in addition to those access mission points, is what we're doing inside of the prisons in the state of Nevada. We talk about making sure that every human being who has a desire to learn and excel has a home at CSN. And so while students who are incarcerated in one of our men's or women's prison here in Southern Nevada have that desire, we make sure we provide an outlet for them to achieve those goals while they're still inside the prison. And then, of course, we welcome them following their exit from prison. So in every spectrum in between, from students who are returning from service in the military to students who are trying to work toward a high school diploma, perhaps as an adult now, CSN has a seat for them. So that's kind of, Heather, the long answer to your short question related to the access mission. The other side of our mission is around student success. And so we really pride ourselves on ensuring that students who start with CSN finish with CSN. And whatever that means for a student, whether they are coming to CSN to get their start in college and they have a desire to transfer to one of our four-year university friends in Southern Nevada or anywhere else in the world, that many, many students, 20,000 of them, in fact, will start with CSN this year. And as they work toward accumulating their first degree, we call it the associate's degree, then they have a bridge to the university of their choice following the completion of their first 2 years of college with us. So that transfer mission is certainly alive and well. And to get there, we really, again, pride ourselves on their success. And so we wrap around our students with all kinds of support, from extra tutoring if they need it, to supplemental instruction if they need it, to every extracurricular activity that their hearts could possibly receive, from athletic programs to student clubs to student government, those sorts of things to sort of balance out their experience, to financial support for students who need that, to basic human needs support from a food pantry to childcare support to help with transportation. So all of those things that go into our portfolio of student success is another element of our mission. So access on the front end, student success on the back end. How's that?
Yeah, that's awesome. So as people start looking at higher education options in the Valley, obviously there's several great schools here. So why would they choose CSN over the others?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it takes all of us in Nevada to create a opportunity for higher education and for workforce training for our citizens. And so each one of our institutions provide that avenue in a different ways. For CSN, it's important for us that we make sure our listeners know that it's the most affordable access point for higher education in Southern Nevada. So there's an affordability piece to that equation. There's also a really unique quality piece, and that comes back to this perspective of the idea that we meet students where they are in their education preparation. And what I mean by that is no matter where a student may land in their competencies for mathematics or for reading or for writing or for their understanding of U.S. history, whatever the courses are that they may be taking, that we ensure that our students are going to get the one-on-one attention that they need to remediate if they need to have some remediation because it's been a minute since they've been in a math classroom or a writing experience. Or if they're already excelling in those areas, we would leverage these students to be tutors for others and pay them to do it. And so this idea that college is affordable and CSN is a place for that, for students to understand that CSN is the right choice if they're looking for individualized attention. You know, Heather, one of the things we pride ourselves on at CSN is our student-to-teacher ratio. Our students will not find themselves in a large lecture hall with 250 fellow students in that same room and one teacher, but rather our average class size is floating around 25 students to one faculty member. So our faculty know their students' names, they know their stories, they know their strengths, they know their opportunities for improvement. And we literally walk our students in support through every experience that they have academically so that we can make sure we see them on that graduation stage. Now, they got to put in the work. Don't get me wrong. For sure, the students put in their work. But at the same time, there's no reason for them to fail if they take advantage of all the support services that CSN has to offer.
Nice. Okay. So how many programs and degrees does CSN offer?
Over 180 programs at CSN, everything from automotive to welding to nursing to cardiorespiratory to vet tech to sociology and women's studies, psychology, sociology, physical sciences. I mean, I could go on and on. There's over 180 programs. And one of the things, Heather, that we really try to do is to make sure that students are making intentional choices about their college career. So it's not just about coming in and learning human soft skills or coming in to learn how to be good thinkers and good societal contributors. That's all important. And those things are embedded within the curriculum, those kinds of outcomes. But it's also to think about for a student, what's the end goal here? If I'm going to come to CSN or I'm going to go to another university, what's the finish line look like for me and why? So we start with the end in mind with our students. We have these kinds of conversations, and it kind of goes back, Heather, to conversations probably you and I had along with every other human being in this country from kindergarten. You know, when you're sitting around that magic red carpet with your kindergarten teacher and it's sort of career day and you disclose maybe as a five-year-old, you know, what you want to be when you grow up. We have those conversations with our college students as they're first entering the door because we want to make sure that the path of study that they have declared as their major has an identifiable pathway to a real career waiting for them on the other end. For some of these students, that means that their academic pathway might be just one semester. So, for example, if a student wants to become a phlebotomist, they want to work in the healthcare industry as a phlebotomist, we can get them in and out of phlebotomy school within a matter of a couple of months. On the flip side, if a student wants to become a nurse, a registered nurse, we know that that pathway is going to take them about 2 years to complete. If they want to become a bachelor's prepared nurse, well, there's a four-year pathway for that, right? And so really making sure our students understand if that's their end in mind, they know they want to be a firefighter or a paramedic, they want to be a police officer. Here is the academic pathway to get there. And as we said, we have 180 of those to choose from.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, you did mention the option of getting an associate's degree at CSN and then transferring to another college or university to finish out 4 years. But how many bachelor level programs are there at CSN?
You bet. We offer about a little over 15 bachelor's programs today. These are up and coming. Most of them are applied bachelor's degrees. We just had a handful of new bachelor programs be approved by the State Board of Regents. So this is everything from dental hygiene to cardio respiratory sciences to fire management to deaf studies and interpretation to project management. We just had a plethora of new bachelor's degrees open up in the hospitality space, culinary, food operations, travel and tourism and event planning. So as you're thinking about what the workforce looks like in Nevada and the level of education attainment that is required to be successful in that career path, oftentimes bachelor's degrees are the new norm. And so we wanted to make sure that for these nuanced pathways, that if a bachelor's was required or is required, and that the universities were not in that space or were not able to produce enough graduates for the potential employers in this field in Nevada, that CSN would come around and make sure that we were providing that pathway. Again, going back to our access mission for higher education. Really excited about some brand new environmental science bachelor's degrees as well, including the most recent one that was just approved here a few months ago in the area of geomatics and land surveying. So again, bachelor's degrees are very well thought through at CSN. And if there's a need or a niche in Nevada and it's not already being offered by one of our sisters or brothers within the Nevada system of higher education, then we take that as a cue to go ahead and develop it.
Nice. So it seems like a lot of those programs would require in-person, hands-on instruction, but how many of your programs and classes are available online?
You bet. Well, let's start with the class modality first, or the courses. Right now, about 50% of our total class offering this fall semester is online. And the other 50% or so has some element of in-person instruction. And the reason we did that, Heather, is we wanted to recognize the importance of how students learn the best. Some students learn very much by needing to go into a physical classroom in a physical building and sit in a seat that's next to other students, right? With the professors in the room, and that cyclical experience each week, day in and day out, is sort of predictable in that way. And so we still offer those. And you can guess the kinds of courses that are in that hands-on sort of in-person instructional space. Of course, a plethora of general education courses for those students who prefer to learn English or learn mathematics or writing or history in the physical classroom. But then the flip side of that is you think about some of these hands-on applied areas. It's difficult to train a chef if they're trying to learn how to be a chef online, right? They got to physically get into the culinary kitchens and cook, right? And create these creations. Similarly, right? Many, many, many of our health science programs, in fact, just about all of them, require that in-person experience. Very difficult to train a nurse and a registered nurse with bedside care in the context of an online experience. And so that obviously folds out well in in-person experiences. Biology and the laboratories that are associated with learning biology, again, in the physical setting. Automotive techs and welders. You know, we can create online simulations for folks who are learning how to be welders, but until they get that torch in their hand, they're never going to be a certified welder. And so those are the kinds of programs particularly that lend themselves much, much better to in-person instruction. We've got three main campuses and a host of sites all over this valley that will accommodate the in-person instruction. On the flip side, though, and this is something that we really learned a lot about, particularly during the great pandemic, right, during COVID years, and that was, how do we provide an access of education in the online modality when students physically could not come to campus in the heat of a pandemic? And so our faculty, our world-class faculty, really came up with some creative ways to deliver sort of synchronous and asynchronous instruction, meaning a student could log in no matter where they're at in the world, and they could opt for asynchronous instruction, meaning they log in on their own time during the week. They have a certain segment of assignments they need to do and interactivities they need to do, but it's on their time during the week, versus synchronous instruction for online education, where students log in, and in that moment in time, on that day of the week and on that hour of the day, the student and the faculty member is together. They just happen to be engaged in Zoom or Teams or some other video conferencing tool, but they still engage in synchronous instruction at the same time. They're just not all necessarily gathered in the same physical room. And so we've learned a lot about that particular delivery at CSN in these post-COVID years. and it's really thriving well. Like I said, about 50% of our total offerings are in that synchronous or asynchronous online instruction space, and certainly a very popular mode of instruction, but not for every student for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Now, it sounds like there's a lot of flexibility and various options, but what kind of schedule availability do people need if they want to be a student at CSN?
Well, sure. If you think about it in the context of online education, as we were just kind of talking about, students need to be able to log in at least daily to their online course, but they can work around their own work schedules or their own family obligations. You know, with the young students' school starting here relatively recently, right? We think about the fact that our students are parents. And so oftentimes our students at CSN need to negotiate their children or their young people's lives in school. And so they can't get to their own college studies until well into the evening hours or sometimes on the weekends. And so that affords the online modality as a preference for many of our students who are parents or caring for family members. On the flip side, for those students who are in programs that require in-person instruction, or they just desire to have that in-person experience, our classes, Heather, are running from sunup to sundown and then well into the evening hours. We begin classes for some classes as early as 7 a.m. And we go on all the way until midnight on our campuses at CSN. And so students who are sort of getting off that swing shift, they know they can capture one class at least before the day's over in person at one of our campuses. And for students who perhaps have the mornings off and don't go into work till later, they know they can start their day at CSN, get their classwork underway and finished, and then they're off to the races for work. So really an opportunity to access a CSN class almost 24/7.
Wow, that's fantastic. So now beyond the classes, what sorts of extracurricular activities are available for students?
This is so important, Heather, and I'm glad you asked this question. What we know in higher education research is that the college experience is not just about what they're learning inside the classroom, but what they can learn outside of the classroom. And so this is where a lot of our extracurricular structures come into play. Whether a student wants to get integrated into one of the dozens and dozens and dozens of school clubs or student-run organizations. We have an student organization for just about everything you can think of. Just about every academic major has an associated club that's tied to it. There's an advisor that's usually a faculty member or a staff member that helps to advise that club, but they're truly run by the students within that club. So it provides an opportunity for the students to engage in some leadership and some coordination as well. CSN offers, like all colleges, a very robust student government experience as well. So for those students who are really looking to do some representing and to be a student government leader by being a senator or a student body president or vice president or treasurer or secretary, et cetera, those opportunities exist. Our student government is alive and thriving at CSN. We really rely on our elected student government officials as well to provide all of us administrators a voice for the student population. So we're not making decisions that are going to affect our students' lives without making sure that our students have a seat at that decision table. And oftentimes we rely on our student government members to provide those insights on behalf of the student body. And then one other big area of extracurricular activities is what comes in the form of athletics, right? Both competitive athletics as well as intramurals. And we're super proud of our athletic program, both on the intramural front as well as the competitive, more formalized front. We've got men's baseball and women's softball and basketball and volleyball and cross country and soccer. We've got cheer squads. And so we're really beginning to see the emergence of athletics double down over the last handful of years with national titles and national tournaments that our students are participating in. And one of the best things I think about our student athletes, Heather, is that they put academics first. They know that they've got to excel on the field or on the court. They've got to excel in the classroom. And so they've got support to do that. And we really value our student athletes who put their academics first so that they can remain eligible for their athletic programs. So that should give you a good sense, at least, I think, of some of the extracurricular activities that CSN offers to our students.
Yeah, definitely. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, for people who are worried about paying for college, what types of financial aid are available?
There's a lot, you know, as a fully regionally accredited institution, we are afforded by the Department of Education federally to provide students with a pathway to what they refer to as Pell grants, federal financial aid, and or loans if they don't qualify for federal Pell grants. Many of our students do indeed qualify for federal Pell. And so those are federal dollars that are going to support students, not only with their course tuition and fees or registration fees, but also for ancillary things that they may need to be able to be successful in class, whether that be the cost of textbooks or if they're in a program that requires uniforms and get those uniforms, et cetera. From a state financial support perspective, the state of Nevada has afforded many, many pathways to financial support in a variety of different grants. From perhaps the most provocative of recent years is the Nevada Promise Scholarship. It's pretty amazing. What the state legislature did a few years ago now, is they recognized that the importance of our high school population having a pathway to post-secondary education. So what are they going to do with life after high school? And obviously, one of the common misconceptions and oftentimes perceived barriers then is how we're going to fund college. How is a young person possibly going to pay for college? And so the legislature put together a program modeled after a variety of other state programs across the country called the Promise Program. And Nevada's Promise Program affords high school seniors the opportunity to apply to be part of the Promise Program at CSN. There's some volunteering that they have to do. There's a mentor-mentee experience that our high school students get to engage in. And then fundamentally, for any course cost that the federal Pell Grant support doesn't cover, if indeed the student's eligible for Pell, the Promise Scholarship picks up the difference. And vice versa, if a student completed the FAFSA and was not qualified for Pell, then the Nevada Promise Scholarship would cover that full bill for them. So it's kind of a last dollar scholarship in that lens, right? But one way or the other, students, particularly right out of high school, should be covered. So there should be no reason why a young person who's listening today should contemplate that finances are going to get in the way of going to college, because there's lots of opportunities. The Millennium Scholarship is still alive and well within Nevada as well for our recent high school graduates. So lots of those kinds of opportunities for any veterans that might be listening. There's a lot of veteran support. CSN is very much a veteran-friendly institution. We've got a cadre of staff whose full-time job it is at CSN is to meet our vets where they are and to ensure that they've got a pathway to economic prosperity through their own education as well. So we're really big, as you can surely gather now, on our open access mission and how the financing of college is part of that open access mission.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, fall 2024 classes at CSN are starting soon. So what's the deadline to apply?
You bet. That deadline is coming up. In fact, the Sunday after the start of the semester. So if I were to look at the calendar right now and recognizing, of course, that the first day of school is on August 26th, Monday the 26th, that puts September 1st, Sunday, as the last day to enter into registration for regular 16-week classes that begin on August 26th. But one of the unique things I think that makes CSN so special is that not only are we offering a traditional sort of 16-week fall semester lineup of courses, and we've got about almost 5,000 course sections at a time, but we also recognize that students are coming to CSN with a desire to maybe start in October, or maybe they want to start in December, right, or January. And so we have this revolving door of open opportunities to on-ramp into CSN on four-week intervals. So if a student doesn't make it in time for the start of the traditional 16-week semester on August 26th, and they didn't get to take advantage of that late registration period for those classes by September 1st, then they can certainly enroll in classes that begin 4 weeks later, or enroll in classes that begin 4 weeks after that, or 4 weeks after that. So really making sure that our students and our potential students understand there's always a place and a pathway to start at CSN.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so where can people find out more information about the College of Southern Nevada and your various programs, or apply to be a student?
Absolutely. I think the best and easiest place to remember is the website as a starting place. That's csn.edu. And visitors to the page will see very clear directions on where to start click here to become a student, apply here. And the website is very intuitive in that new students will click on a button and it'll take them through a series of steps to first apply, and then they'll be admitted. And then following admissions, they begin their process to actually register for courses. We've got a variety of staff standing by today to make sure that students who need academic advising, who are just trying to figure life out and how their first exposure to college or perhaps coming back to college for so many can happen. We have academic advisors for free standing on in line waiting to help our students as well. There's financial counselors who are standing by to help students as well. So really, a student shouldn't be negotiating how to get into CSN on their own, but certainly starting at csn.edu will give us the initial tip that they are interested in potentially coming to CSN, and they can initiate that process right there.
All right, perfect. So once again, that website, csn.edu, stands for College of Southern Nevada, of course, csn.edu. The fall classes for 2024 start on Monday, August 26th for the standard traditional 16-week session, but you can also apply for later sessions that begin on 4-week rotating basis. So once again, csn.edu is the place to find out all the information and get started if you want to apply. And we've been speaking today with Dr. James McCoy. He's the VP of Academic Affairs for the College of Southern Nevada. And James, it's been great talking to you, as always, finding out all the amazing programs that CSN offers to members of the community and all the reasons why it makes a great place to pursue those academic goals. So I really appreciate you being here sharing with us today. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you, Heather. Thank you so much. Have a great time.
Teachers are dynamic leaders, shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Achieving this takes skill and expertise. They're tireless explorers, creatively discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, experimenting, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, and connecting with each other. Leading by example. Experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vale, and I'm speaking with Megan Murphy, ambassador for Zoom. With kids now back in school, a new national poll shows that parents are pushing for greener and more technologically advanced electric buses to roll out in their communities. Megan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So what exactly is Zoom when it's spelled Z-U-M?
So Zoom is really the leader in student transportation. And for 3 years, they've been doing a national survey that really takes the pulse on school transportation in our country. And there's been some really interesting findings. Parents say, we need change in our school bus transportation system. They want increased safety. They want improved technology. Sustainability is a big concern. And Heather, think about it like this. This really blew my mind. The school bus has been around since 1939, and not much has changed. The same bus I took decades ago is the same school bus my three kids are taking now. So there's really been no innovation, and we need to change that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when we talk about sustainability, it's pretty clear that electric vehicles are better for the environment. But what are the other benefits to EV school buses?
So when we talked to parents, absolutely sustainability was one of their top concerns. But even ahead of that was safety. 3 years running, safety is parents' biggest concern. And that really stems from this lack of visibility. And what I mean by that is we don't know when the buses are coming, if our kids got dropped off or picked up. And we're really looking for tech-enabled solutions to change that. 81% of parents said they would use an app to track the school buses. And this was really fascinating to me, Heather. You know, I can track my Amazon packages. I can know my Uber Eats is coming. I know my Uber is coming. I can have all this tracking ability, but not when it comes to my kids and their buses. And Zoom is changing that. They're really also working with this tech-enabled solutions to work on reliability. 53% of parents said their kid missed the school bus because they didn't know when it was coming. And as a working parent, that is truly problematic. You know, that derails my entire day if my three kids don't get to school on time. Parents were also really concerned about drivers. 70% of parents said, you know what, they deserve more money, and it's an underappreciated field. And then we get to sustainability, and 80% of parents are absolutely concerned about harmful fumes from gas-guzzling diesel buses. Most of these buses are diesel, so air pollution is a concern. Students have issues like asthma, and they're on these buses day in and day out. And parents, 64% of them said, you know what? It's important to convert those diesel buses to electric. We need to get cleaner and greener to have a real impact on the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you're talking about these tech-enabled solutions, how exactly does this tracking work?
So there are mobile apps that allows parents to know, when is the bus coming? Did my kid get on the bus? Is my kid getting safely to school? Think about it the same way you track an Uber driver. Once you sign into that app, you know that the car is arriving. You know that the passenger is safe. You can even share that information with a loved one. When you arrive, you also know that you've arrived safely. So Zoom is really trying to get school buses as up-to-date technologically as, you know, Uber.
Yeah, okay. Now, obviously, technology is fantastic, but it can also be expensive. So how does the cost to maintain an electric school bus fleet compare to other fuel options like the old school diesel that you were talking about earlier?
Sure. So Zoom partners with the district, so they work out all of those costs. And I think this big push for electric is really important because so a place like Oakland, California, which has the first 100% EV bus fleet, they do something called vehicle to grid, V2G. So they charge and they give back power to the grid in the community. So that is massively energy saving, environment forward, and money saving. They're actually giving power back to the grid by virtue of these EV buses.
That's awesome. So you mentioned Oakland, California, but what other communities across the country are already using or looking at EV school buses?
So there are pilot programs across the country. Los Angeles and San Francisco are up next. They're working with Zoom to go 100% EV. And then I think the big things as we look to the future is tech friendly, more districts using this latest technology, using the mobile apps. The goal is to have 10,000 EV buses in the near future. Having families be able to use this mobile app, have live bus maps, I mean, to really catch up to Uber with our transportation for our kids.
Yeah, definitely. And then what do you see as the future of school transportation, let's say 10 to 20 years from now? I mean, I know we're not going to have the flying vehicles that we've been promised, probably, but what do you see as happening?
My dream scenario that we would get to, you know, a big chunk of electric vehicles. I mean, I think that these diesel buses are gas guzzlers and the amount of pollution and the emissions is really, really frightening. And environment alone, as a parent, my kid's safety is so important to me. And I really think that these tech-friendly mobile apps that allow us to keep tabs on our kids, that's going to be commonplace in 10 years.
And in the meantime, you mentioned that parents want these solutions. They want the safety, the technology, the sustainability. But if parents are listening and they're like, yes, we do want this right here in our district, how would they go about starting the process or finding out more?
I'm going to encourage everybody to go to ridezoom.com. And it's Zoom, Z-U-N. Sounds like Zoom, spelled Z-U-M. ridezoom.com. You're going to see all of these findings from this third annual national survey. A lot of it is going to be really eye-opening. And I always say that knowledge is power. Understanding what the needs, what the concerns are, and what is possible is going to empower parents to then take action in their own communities. And on Zoom, you can also see where these technology and these EV solutions are rolling out across the country. There are numerous pilot programs. So go to ridezoom.com to get more info.
Awesome. Okay. So once again, that website is ridezoom.com. That's spelled Z-U-M, ridezoom.com. You can find out all about the poll findings from the third annual survey that Megan's been talking about, where EV school bus fleets across the country are already rolling out, and what the future might look like for parents who are looking for more safety for our kids, better technology so we can track where they are, the sustainability of electric vehicles, all of that, ridezoom.com. And we've been speaking today with Megan Murphy. She's an ambassador for Zoom. And Megan, it's been great talking to you. I didn't even know that we had all these technological options available that could be implemented in the near future. Thank you so much for your time here today.
I appreciate it, Heather. Have a great day.
When a student lacks some of the most basic needs,
like food, clothing, and school supplies,
it can be challenging to even attend school.
It can be hard to study, tough to concentrate, impossible to thrive.
At Communities in Schools, we address this issue every day.
Out in the community, there are great resources for students, and we bring these resources directly to the students who need them most.
We work to ensure that they have everything they need to re-engage in learning in the classroom and at home,
including access to technology, learning materials,
and even emotional support.
By forging caring relationships with students and bringing communities of support to them,
our staff works to achieve equitable learning conditions so all kids can succeed in school and in life. And that's what Communities in Schools is all about.
To learn more, visit communitiesinschools.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Melissa T. Merrick, President and CEO of Prevent Child Abuse America. The back-to-school season can cause extra stress in parents, and that can sometimes trigger a snowball effect. Dr. Merrick, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what exactly is Prevent Child Abuse America?
Well, Prevent Child Abuse America is the nation's oldest and largest national nonprofit that's really focused on preventing child abuse and neglect before it begins. So we do this by supporting families in their own communities. We have local state chapters like Prevent Child Abuse Nevada. We also have research. We have a lot of advocacy that we do. We have a home visiting program called Healthy Families America. So really just a comprehensive approach to help support parents to be the best parents they can be.
Awesome. Now, when you say it's the oldest national nonprofit in this area, how long has Prevent Child Abuse America been around?
So we started in 1972, so we're about 52 years old, and we're, again, the oldest that's really focused on stopping abuse and neglect before it occurs at all.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, what prompted the making of your new public service announcement campaign about preventing child abuse and neglect?
Well, we've come a long way in the past 50 plus years, right, in understanding the underlying causes of child abuse and neglect. And what it's not, right? It's not bad parents. We know overwhelmingly that parents want to be good parents. And things like a parent's own childhood trauma or extreme stressors in their environments may be stopping them from being the best parents they can be. So we all have a role to play in preventing child abuse and neglect and supporting each other. And that's why we made the PSA at this time.
What will people maybe be surprised about when they hear the new PSA?
Well, I think what they're going to be surprised about is that prevention is possible, right? I think there's this sort of idea that there's just going to be violence in some homes or in some communities, but we know that that's not true. We know that if we support parents and caregivers before they're in crisis and we address some of these bigger things that can put kids at risk, like access to affordable, high-quality childcare or healthcare, safe and affordable housing, other things that are protective in the environment and in relationships, we can improve outcomes for millions of children. So I just think that sometimes we don't know what the power of prevention is when we work in partnership across sector and across community.
Yeah, definitely. In what ways does shame or guilt get in the way of finding the root causes of child maltreatment?
Yeah, well, it gets in the way a lot because I think it's a fallacy that there are perfect parents, right? Or that some of us parent on our own and we make all the right decisions and we do it with a level head at all times. Actually, no, we all need support sometimes, right? So breaking through that shame allows us to get to the real root causes, which are the conditions, right? Which are the stressors that exist for all of us that we all need some support to break through. So reducing the stigma of asking for help, supporting one another, making that the default, what can each of us do to actually help prevent child abuse everywhere? That's sort of the new narrative shift that we want to create.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that in some cases, parents might be continuing a cycle of violence or neglect that they experienced in their childhood. How can we break that cycle for those parents?
Oh, absolutely. That's such an important question. And we know that the good things and the bad things that happen in childhood stay with us across our lives and across generations, as you said. So when kids suffer from traumatic experiences in childhood, like abuse and neglect, they're at a higher risk for numerous mental health and physical health issues into adulthood. And when we invest more time and resources into preventing these experiences in the first place, we reduce the risk of the 5 leading causes of death in this country, including things that people don't always expect, like cancer and heart disease, diabetes, stroke, obesity. You know, when we have healthier kids, they go on to be healthier adults. And the impact is great for all of us because healthier adults contribute to a stronger workforce, stronger economy, really a stronger society that supports one another.
Okay, so you're saying that when we prevent child abuse and neglect from happening, we're not just helping that child and that family, but there are long-term repercussions that go wider than that?
That's right. That's right. Because when we help one child in one community, right, we go on to have a healthier workforce pipeline, for example. We're able to reach our nation's health, well-being, and prosperity goals when we have healthier people that are able to, you know, access the positive parts of their brain, right? It's just so much happening in childhood in terms of development, brain development, even the way our genes express themselves, all kind of start in childhood and beyond.
Okay. Now, for parents who are just stressed out because it's back to school season, they've got a lot on their plate, and they just happen to be taking out that stress on the kids in one way or another, what tips do you have for those parents?
Yeah, you know, any time of transition can be really stressful, even if it's exciting, right? Back to school time can be exciting, but also stressful as we navigate new schedules and stuff. The same tips that you hear year round are what we're going to tout here too, because they work, right? Talking to someone you trust about the stressors, coming up with solutions, that will help minimize the stress that you bring home, right? Not being afraid to ask for help, but also to accept help. We all need it sometimes, right? So reducing that stigma that, you know, some people are doing this on their own, they're not. We all rely on various supports. And trying to take time out for something fun or silly with your child, like reading a book outside, playing a game, or taking time for ourselves. You know, sometimes we have a lot of guilt if we need our own alone time, but if that helps us, you know, calm down and reduce the overload of stress, that is really a good thing for preventing violence in the home.
Okay. So where can people go if they want to get more information about the effects of child abuse and how to help prevent child abuse?
Yeah, I would just encourage your listeners to visit our website, preventchildabuse.org. We've put together a list of tips and resources specific to back to school. So whether it's to relieve some of your own stress, or to help others in your community. You can also click on the orange Find Help button on our website to search for resources in your own community and to be linked to your own Prevent Child Abuse Nevada chapter.
Nice. Okay. So once again, that website is preventchildabuse.org, preventchildabuse.org. That's the website for Prevent Child Abuse America. If you want to connect to Prevent Child Abuse Nevada, you can just click through under the resources and that will take you there, as well as they have plenty of tips for back to school, handling stress, healthier ways to deal with stress rather than taking it out on the kids. So preventchildabuse.org. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Melissa T. Merrick. She's the president and CEO of Prevent Child Abuse America. And Dr. Merrick, it's been great talking to you and finding out, first of all, the state of child abuse across the country, how impactful it can be in a negative way to our communities, and how we can all help prevent it as well. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather.
Most people think child abuse is a bad parent problem.
Actually, the root causes may be different than you think.
Let us explain. Affordable housing for everyone.
That prevents child abuse. And access to healthcare in every community.
Prevents child abuse too. High quality, affordable child care.
Paid family leave.
School breakfast and lunch programs.
All of this prevents child abuse.
It's all about keeping families out of crisis in the first place.
At least 1 in 7 children in the United States have experienced abuse or neglect in the past year. Prevent Child Abuse America promotes policies, programs, and resources informed by science that help communities, parents, and kids thrive.
Because when we keep families out of crisis,
we prevent child abuse
from ever happening.
Go to preventchildabuse.org to learn more.
That's preventchildabuse.org.
Let's solve child abuse before it ever happens.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Dr. Dan Necht, a practicing physician and vice president and chief clinical innovation officer for CVS Caremark. Extreme heat kills more Americans each year than all other weather events combined. But health emergencies are preventable. A new Environmental Health Impact Initiative supports the people most vulnerable to extreme weather. Dr. Necht, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you about this very important issue.
So we're seeing especially high temperatures across the country right now, and particularly here in Las Vegas. How do the hotter temperatures affect people with chronic conditions?
So I think first and foremost, it's important to know this critical insight. Heat waves kill more Americans each and every year than hurricanes, floods, fires, earthquakes combined. The good news is a lot of these deaths and suffering associated with heat waves is preventable. What does heat do to the body? I think first and foremost, high heat, high humidity really stresses the body. So patients can develop heat exhaustion, heat cramps, even heat stroke. Additionally, folks with chronic conditions like heart disease, like congestive heart failure, asthma, chronic kidney disease, this is a real high heat can really stress the organs and cause organ damage and exacerbate these conditions, causing heart attacks, strokes, or acute kidney injury.
Wow. Okay. So what is the new Environmental Health Impact Initiative all about?
So the new Environmental Health Impact Initiative is as follows. We pull in weather data, so that's heat, humidity, air quality data, and then we pair that with data from CVS and Aetna. And so what we're able to do is identify folks that we're caring for, involved in their care. We identify those individuals who are at the highest risk of a poor health outcome related to high heat. And what we're able to do is up to several days prior to the arrival of a heat wave, our nurses call these folks and warn them of an incoming heat wave, but also engage them in a conversation about being safe in high heat and high humidity. So that's providing information around cooling centers, making sure they have a working air conditioner, ensuring they have enough money to pay for the electricity bill, thinking about the impact high heat has on the body, but also with certain medications. I recently learned that high heat can interfere with the body's ability to react appropriately to high heat for medications like cardiovascular medication or mental health medications. So providing these insights and talking through a heat action plan with these patients is critical to keeping them safe.
So who's eligible to participate in the Environmental Health Impact Initiative?
Sure. So this initiative is cost-free, and we've started with our Aetna Medicare Advantage population across the entire United States. And our intent really is to roll this out more broadly across our CVS Health assets. So that's our pharmacies, It's our Minute Clinics and it's beyond. And so right now, this is a national initiative for Aetna Medicare Advantage. And we've called several hundred individuals already across 25 states.
So once you reach out to them and set them up in the system, what types of resources do patients have access to?
Great question. So in terms of resources, I think first and foremost, what's really unique about this initiative is that we have a registered nurse perform an outbound call. And so that nurse will have a rich conversation around signs and symptoms of heat-related illness. We have a conversation around resources in the community, for example, access to a cooling center. That could be an Oak Street cooling center as well. We also provide information around behavior change, making sure the individual knows to change sort of their activities of daily living to stay out of the hot environment during the day. Also educating on pet care, right? So those are some initiatives and resources we provide. I think we also provide a really important initiative around mental health. So high heat can cause or exacerbate mental health issues. And so being able to connect that individual with resources to support that person if he or she has mental health issues is another important component of the initiative.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Now, beyond the obvious heat waves we're currently experiencing, why is the Environmental Health Impact Initiative so important right now?
So it's becoming very obvious that the environment is changing and it's changing quickly. There are more and more extreme weather events, including heat waves. Unfortunately, air quality is diminishing across the United States. So if we want to think about keeping the folks we're taking care of safe, we need to think holistically around the environment.
Okay. Now, for listeners who may or may not be involved in the initiative, what are some tips they should keep in mind during heat waves, how to deal with them at home?
Yes. So I think it's important to have a heat action plan. And that really varies as it relates to the individual and the conditions in which they're living. So making sure there's access to an air conditioned or at least a well-fanned room, making sure there's access to ample hydration, taking care of pets and loved ones. I also think this is a great opportunity to check in on community members that may not have those resources and making sure they also have a heat action plan. I think also just understanding how your body works and the impact of heat on the body and whatever health conditions you have, that's a great conversation to have with your physician or other healthcare professional.
Awesome. So where can people go to learn more about the dangers of extreme heat and the Environmental Health Impact Initiative?
Absolutely. I recommend people check us out at cvshealth.com. Also, the CDC and the EPA have really helpful resources online to learn more.
Perfect. Okay. So once again, that website, cvshealth.com, cvshealth.com. You can also find information from the CDC or the EPA about how extreme heat can affect our health, our physical health, our mental health, our pets, everything around us, how it's affected by that extreme heat. So cvshealth.com. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Dan Necht. He's a practicing physician and also vice president and chief clinical innovation officer for CVS Caremark. And Dr. Necht, I really appreciate you being here and letting us know more about the dangers of high heat and also the initiative that's now in place to help patients and how people can deal with heat waves on their own at home. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Heather.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, August 19th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Adelson Clinic, and Monday, September 9th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Unforgettables Foundation. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Las Vegas Rescue Mission is holding their annual bottled water drive through August 31st. When the summer is hot, people experiencing homelessness need water more than ever. You can drop off bottled water donations at the Las Vegas Rescue Mission security gate 24/7. Find out more at vegasrescue.org. That's vegasrescue.org. ADL's annual Walk Against Hate is happening on Sunday, September 29th, with doors at 8:30 a.m. and program at 10 a.m. at Las Vegas Ballpark. Proceeds from the walk benefit a variety of initiatives, including the award-winning No Place for Hate program in K-12 schools throughout Nevada. Register to walk or find out more at walkagainsthate.org/LVWalkAgainstHate. That's walkagainsthate.org/LVWalkAgainstHate. The Nevada chapter of the Bleeding Disorders Foundation is holding their annual Unite for Bleeding Disorders Walk on Saturday, October 12th, with opening ceremonies at 10 a.m. and the walk starting at 10:30 a.m., followed by a picnic lunch at 11:15 at Floyd Lamb Park. A variety of prizes will be awarded for the top teams and individuals, and if you personally raise or donate $25 or more, you'll receive a special Unite for Bleeding Disorders t-shirt. Find out the details or register to walk at uniteforbleedingdisorders.org. That's uniteforbleedingdisorders.org. And the Just One Project's hosting the fourth annual Big Cup Golf Tournament on Thursday, October 17th at the Revere Golf Club. Join the organization and their sponsors on the green to raise funds for the Just One Project programs with friendly competition, food, and drinks. Find out more or sign up to play at thejustoneproject.org. That's thejustoneproject.org.